Our next speaker is Professor Tim Gary. He's the Canada Research Chair in Parasite Biotechnology and also the Director of the Institute of Parasitology at McGill. Professor Gary earned his bachelor's in biology from the University of Notre Dame and his PhD in pharmacology from the University of Michigan. And before coming to McGill, he was at the Upjohn Company for many years in Michigan, where he led a team in anti-parasitic drug discovery. And since 2005, he's been at McGill as a Tier 1 Canada Research Chair. And he maintains an active collaborative research program on genomic and proteomic analysis of host parasite interface focused on mosquito-borne parasitic disease. So.
There you go.
Bonjour, merci beaucoup pour l'invitation. I'm really happy to be here to talk about some of my favorite creatures in the world. This is going to be something that most of you are not familiar with, as Monty Python would say, now for something completely different. So I want to focus on parasitic diseases and infectious diseases in general that are related to water and how water scarcity and agricultural practices influence the epidemiology of these diseases. So one of the big differences between donor countries and recipient countries is the role of labor. Farmers or crop producers in developed countries have all kinds of labor-saving devices. So the labor is dependent really on tractors and balers and harvesters and all kinds of stuff. In poor countries, it's manual labor. So the health of the workforce is an extraordinarily important impact or influencing factor on productivity. Here, everyone knows if you have a cold, a bad cold, you don't feel very good, but most of us go and plop our butts down in front of a computer anyway, and with over-the-counter medication, we sleep a lot, but we make it through the day and we still get paid. But if you have a really bad cold and you don't have medicines, and your job is to go hoe a field in 38 degrees, your productivity is markedly impacted. So one of the big differences that we have to face is that the health of that workforce is a very important factor in how productive it's going to be. Water resources are diminishing. Population growth in countries places increasingly heavy burdens on water supplies. Inadequate sanitation and limited access to these supplies increase the risk of infection because people go to centralized water resources. Okay? One of the advantages we have in the developed countries is that our water sources are actually dispersed. So you use taps. You don't have to go to a central watering place to gather your water. It could be surface water, even a well. I mean, if you look at that middle picture, just because it comes from the ground doesn't mean it's safe. So if one of those kids happens to have a rotavirus diarrhea or, say, an E. coli or a salmonella infection, that water place is going to become contaminated. So we can't assure clean water just by having a well. The same thing is true in a surface water. In the past history, when human populations were at low densities, rapidly flowing waters were a really good way to reduce the chance of infections. But as we tap into these water resources for irrigation and we slow the flow and we increase local populations, it becomes increasingly difficult to protect ourselves simply by natural flushing, if you will. So a big example, if I have diarrhea, which happens from time to time, you don't even know it. It happens in my home. It's a secret. You're probably not going to be infected by me, okay? If I medicate myself for cold and I go to work anyway because I'm a tough guy and I don't want to stay home and be a baby, yeah, you're all going to get it. But in these situations where you have a centralized water resource, the person with diarrhea will transmit that infection broadly across the community. As water resources become scarcer and human populations increase their use of centralized resources, infectious disease transmission is bound to increase. We don't understand, I think, we don't internalize this extraordinary impact of infectious diseases in poor countries. In many regions, infectious diseases contribute significantly to or cause 50% of mortality. That's really unheard of for the West or the Northwest, if you will. But in addition to that, morbidity is a huge economic factor that we really don't incorporate into our models very well. The output of workers is dependent on their health. We actually have relatively poor ways of measuring this. Sickness in a family leads to loss of time in the field. We had a talk earlier that I think 85% of workers in Ethiopia are engaged in farm practices, and it's mostly at the level of just subsistence farming. If you're sick and you can't go to the field, you don't have money to hire a substitute, the family suffers. If a child has malaria and requires care, the mother can't go get the water that's necessary for the rest of the family. Productivity suffers. As medical people, we have very poor ways to monitor what it means not to feel well. If you have a cold, I can measure the rate of your coughing, and if I was really interested in gross things, I'd measure the rate of mucus flow out of your nose. But if you have a pile of worms in your gut, you don't feel good. But how do I measure that? How do I do an intervention that says I'm going to make you feel better? And on this scale of 1 to 10, do you feel better? But people that have parasites feel better when they're gone. How many people have parasites? Worms or helminths? Estimates are a quarter to a third of the world's population. Okay, these are very common infectious agents. I'm going to give you one or two examples. So since we can't measure outputs based on that, we have a very difficult time putting control programs or maintaining control programs. In veterinary medicine, we know if you have a herd of cows and you treat them with a drug that kills worms, even if they don't have very many, the milk output goes up. So in that one, we don't measure milk output in humans very well. The few times that we've measured the effects of deworming, as it's called grossly, were simple studies. One was in Kenya, which was how many wheelbarrow loads can a man move in a day? And before and after giving a medicine that would get rid of the worms, the output went up by about 20%. Now, these are studies in the 50s or the 60s, so it hasn't really been replicated. Another one was in a fish market, and it was how many fish could you throw? But we don't really get into that very well. We know in kids, if you deworm kids, school attendance and school performance goes up. Infections have real impacts on the productivity and success of populations. Just as an example, malaria is suggested to reduce the GDP by 1% in many sub-Saharan. This is a huge impact. And it isn't just mortality. No one's had malaria. But if you have malaria, boy, you just don't feel good. You can't work. It's a sapping infection. Did we have it in North America? Oh, my goodness. It used to be known as the ague. One of the universities I worked at, Michigan State University in East Lansing, Michigan, the center of the state, construction of the university ceased every summer in the 1850s because all the workers had malaria and they couldn't get any work done. The same was true in southern Ontario. Malaria was in Montreal. This is just an example of how these infections intersect with poverty. And this is an active research area of Professor Koski and Professor Scott in our institute, and several of the students are here today. I'm very happy to see. It's extraordinarily complex. Malnutrition, poor nutrition, poor health care leads to increased rates of infection. Rates of infection also then reduce agricultural output, increasing malnutrition. Anemia due to hookworms consuming your blood. Malaria, schistosomiasis, which we'll talk about in a minute, and even the helminths, the nematodes that we pick up from the soil, these are all related to water. So malaria is spread by mosquitoes, which require water to breed. Schistosomes are spread through snails, which live in canals. And soil-transmitted helminths are not such an issue when we have adequate sanitation. Here's just an example of a couple of case studies, how our management of water resources influences the epidemiology of infectious diseases. And malaria is spread by mosquitoes in the genus Anopheles. And the key here is that the larval stage of the mosquito requires water. And different species of mosquito have different predilections. The infection is basically a parasite that gets into your blood cells and ruptures them as it consumes your resources. Different species can be lethal. The global burden is estimated to be about 500 million infections a year, with about 1 million deaths, almost all those in children under the age of 5. Was it a problem? Oh, yeah. So most people here are not old enough to remember Franklin Roosevelt or even the previous depression. But the Tennessee Valley is a part of the U.S., which was very poor, very undeveloped. And in the 1930s, a series of dams were built to introduce electric power to the region. This was thought to transform the economics. At that time, malaria affected 30% of the population in these valleys. So this was still a prevalent infection in the United States. Unanticipated results of building the dams were a huge increase in mosquito populations. You see that little tiny mosquito on the thumb? We have those here. It's Anopheles quadrimaculatus. And it's a pretty good malaria vector. And what it really liked to breed in was the sort of brushy areas just submerged. So when they flooded these valleys, they hadn't cleared the brush, and the mosquito population bloomed, and the rates of malaria went way up. Well, after the fact, they figured this was a problem. They started to clear the brush before they flooded these areas. They also lowered and raised the water to reduce mosquito breeding population sites. They sprayed a whole bunch of chemicals, and they moved populations. So there was a law in some of these places that you could not be within 1 mile of the waterfront after dark when the mosquitoes feed. So they just excluded people. So eventually they got rid of it. The last cases in the U.S., I think, were in the 50s. But this is an example of the failure to take mosquitoes into account. Vector populations, changing water sources and water supplies changes the ability of mosquitoes to breed. One of the huge deficits that we face is all the entomologists are gone. So the people that understand mosquito biology are really, really depleted. Here's another one. This is the schistosome. Schistosomes are lovely little blood flukes that live for 10 to 15 years inside of you quite happily, producing their eggs, which you reintroduce into the environment if you have inadequate sanitation. There's what's called an intermediate host, and these are snails. And they live in a whole bunch of different water systems. And if you happen to come in contact with these snails or with the parasites as they exit the snails, you can get infected. Three species are most important for humans. But even here, we have something called swimmer's itch, which is a schistosome that normally lives in mammals like beavers and things like that, will infect people, but it doesn't succeed. Globally, there's about 200 million infections, and the case studies that are most important are the Aswan Dam in Egypt on the bottom, but what I'm more familiar with is the Jazeera Irrigation District in Sudan. When irrigation canals were built, an unanticipated result was the introduction of perfect breeding grounds for these snails, Biome filaria genus snails. And schistosomiasis spread throughout these regions. We now have a single drug that's used to treat this infection. It's not perfect, and we control but do not eradicate the infection at all. In Jazeera District in Sudan, when I visited there, I used to work there on malaria some years ago, you could actually look into the canals, and as far as you could see were snails. Now, schistosomiasis and many of these helminth diseases are chronic. They're not acute. If you're a little kid and it's 38 or 40 degrees outside and there's a source of water, holy cow, you are not going to keep those kids out of the water. That's just a fact of life. With inadequate sanitation, with migration of infected human populations, this is a very, very difficult infection to control. And the last one I want to mention is this, which is a case of hope. Dracunculus metanensis, or the guinea worm. Remarkable parasites. They can grow up to a meter in length, and they live subdermally. And they migrate and form a blister. The bottom picture is a worm coming out of a person. They form a little blister, and then the female sticks the ovejector out, and when you get into the water, she lays her eggs. And these larvae are taken up by copepods, little aquatic invertebrates. And if you happen to drink one, you'll get the infection. You see, one of the treatments for the infection is to wind the worm out on a stick. This is done very slowly. And some people think that the symbol of physicians, the caduceus, with the serpent on a stick, really reflects an ancient practice of winding out guinea worms. How else would you get that? So one of the terrific things about this is that only about 5,000 human cases remain in the world. A lot of this was done by the Carter Foundation in the U.S., who said a very simple strategy can change the whole dynamics of the infection. Don't let infected people go into the water. Remove the adults when you can. But filter the water, which is easy to do through cheesecloth before it's drunk, and then the infection stops. So local interventions based on a knowledge of the parasite biology were able to, I think, in the fairly near future to eradicate this disease from humans, even though it remains zoonotic, meaning dogs can get it and cows can get it. All right. What are the important points? Prevalence of infectious diseases is dependent on host density. That's just the fact of the epidemiology of infectious diseases, because transmission is easier when you have lots of hosts around, whether it's viral, bacterial, or parasitic. Water scarcity in a local context increases local human density because they go to the water source in order to get what they need. This is inevitably going to affect the rates of water-related infectious diseases. Agricultural policies that we're going to adopt to support food production, to achieve sustainability of food security, have to be undertaken in this context of water demand and water usage, not just, okay, how much of the river's going here or there, but what is it going to do to the chances of transmission of infectious diseases? This is particularly an important point where local health care is not up to the challenge, perhaps, of meeting infectious disease problems. If we want to develop further by industrial approaches, we have to understand that industrial demands for water are very, very serious, and they have to be conducted in that light. Sanitation alone is not enough. Vector control is independent of that, and that's also essential. And the last thing I would just like to say about that is that all these things have to be undertaken in a cultural context. I know one of the speakers mentioned the color of beets. I think it set off the local farmers, and they didn't like the color of beets. I know in my own work, some people think, geez, these medicines are Western. They're not for us. They're white men's medicines. It's not what we use. And sometimes in our biases, we think, oh, my gosh, how stupid can you be? Of course, we know best. Whenever I think that, I try to think how many people think that vaccines cause autism. And I try to think of how many people think Barack Obama was not born in Hawaii or is the Antichrist. And I realize this is global, okay? This is not any. But have you ever tried to talk to those people? Oh, wow. So we have to keep in mind it's very difficult to import different cultural ideas, and that has to be undertaken very seriously. So this is our little institute, and we're very grateful to the province for the support that they provide, and thank you for your attention.